ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
मे यदि जायेरं मृत्युर्वा न मृयेत चेत् विपारययो वाकिं न स्याद् गतिर्धातुर्दुरत्यया उपाष्टितो निवारतेता निवृता पुनरापदेत्. Vasudev continued, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth, or since he is already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up his immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Vasudeva wanted to save the life of Devaki by promising to deliver his sons to Kamsa. In the future, he thought Kamsa may die, or I may not beget any sons. Even if a son is born and I deliver him to Kamsa, Kamsa may die at his hands, for by providence anything could happen. It is very difficult to understand how things are managed by providence. Thus, Vasudeva decided that he would promise to deliver his sons to the hands of Kamsa in order to save Devaki from the imminent danger of death. When a fire, for some unseen reason, leaps over one place, piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Similarly, when a living being accepts one kind of body and leaves aside another, there is no other reason than unseen destiny. Purport. When there is a fire in a village, the fire sometimes jumps over one house and burns another. Similarly, when there is a forest fire, the fire sometimes jumps over one tree and catches another. Why this happens, no one can say. One may set forth some imaginary reason why the nearest tree or house did not catch fire, whereas a tree or house in a distant place did. But actually, the reason is destiny. This reason also applies to the transmigration of the soul, by which a prime minister in one life may become a dog in the next. The work of unseen destiny cannot be ascertained by practical experimental knowledge, and therefore one must be satisfied by reasoning that everything is done by supreme providence. Evam vimrishya tam papam yavar atmani darshanam pujayam asavai solir bahumana purasaram. After thus considering the matter as far as his knowledge would allow, Vasudeva submitted his proposal to the sinful Kamsa with great respect. Prasana varam bhoja nirshamsam nirapatrapam manasadu yamanena vihasan idam abravit. Vasudeva's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally spoke as follows. Vasudeva said, O best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki, because what you have heard from the unseen omen, the cause of death will be her sons. Therefore, I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them into your hands. Purport. Kamsa feared Devaki's existence, because of her 8th pregnancy. She would give birth to a son who would kill him. Vasudeva, therefore, to assure his brother-in-law the utmost safety, promised to bring him all the sons. He would not wait for the 8th son, but from the very beginning would deliver to the hands of Kamsa all the sons to which Devaki would give birth. This was the most liberal proposition offered by Vasudeva to Kamsa. The example is given here of fire. How it is that sometimes as a fire is sweeping through a village, it catches one house, and then the next 1, 2, 3, 4 houses are untouched, and then the next house is burned. Or the same condition of trees in a forest fire. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining that we can imagine so many logical reasons why this happened. But the basis is destiny or providence. So in this world, our logical propensities are always trying to explain everything according to our capacity to comprehend. We're always trying to find some material explanation for everything. And that which cannot be materially explained, such a rational mind simply does not want to believe that it could happen. But in truth, the soul cannot be seen by the eyes. And the nature of the soul cannot be explained according to our ability to conceive in reference to our material experience. Because the soul is eternal. The idea of eternality we very loosely say this word so many times, eternal. And, of course, the grossly materialistic people, they do not believe anything can be eternal. And the devotees, they believe what is eternal. But do they really have any understanding of what eternal means? You have to actually be transcendental to have any real cognizance of what is eternal. Because you are speaking of a principle that is contrary to the whole mechanism of how our mind functions. Because our mind is conditioned to see everything according to how our senses have received information and put that data within the mind. And in this world, everything has beginning and end. Therefore, we are trying to see everything accordingly. But what the scripture does, and what the guru and the sadhus do, is they have to somehow or other, in the West there's a saying, to blow your mind. That is actually what they have to do. They have to blow your mind. They have to completely create an experience in your mind where all of its rational attachments to the limitations of the world through sense perception are just blown up. Therefore, the Bhagavatam describes purposely things that inconceivable, incomprehensible. When Shukadeva Goswami explains the structure of the universe in the 5th canto of the Bhagavatam, when Lord Sri Krishna performed so many of his wonderful pastimes, when Kartama Muni creates an aerial mansion, which is a whole city, with beautiful opulence, he creates it with his mind, and how it's just like an airplane, gracefully flying from one planet in the universe to another. Even our rocket ships, which are really, they sound demoniac. They make all terrible explosions, fires coming out from the bottom of them. And they're just like, they're just piercing through the sky. And the astronauts are tied down with heavy-duty belts to their seats so they don't go flying all over the place and get killed. And what they eat and drink, they learn how to recycle their urine to drink it, and all these crazy things just to make ends meet when in outer space. Of course, here in India, that's considered Ayurvedic by some people. But most people do not think like this. One of your prime ministers did this, and he created a very bad name in India. It's that people are so stereotyped. I used to give lectures at colleges, and every single lecture, I'd get the same question. If we join your movement, do we have to drink our own urine? Every lecture. That's how the American people think, because one of your prime ministers, it was in all the papers that he drank his own urine. So they were thinking anybody from India must drink their urine, because they saw our movement was from India. We don't mind your movement. You have a very nice philosophy. We agree a lot to things you say, but do we have to drink our urine if we do? You've told everyone in India drinks urine, their own. I said, I have been in this movement for 20 years. I have never drank urine. I've drunk cow urine before, but not my own. They like that one. Oh yes, the cows are holy. We heard about that too. But in this way, these astronauts, to attempt to go to some other planet, what a demoniac way of going, huh? Fire, smoke, explosions, takeoffs, all sorts of dangerous predicaments. And sometimes, like a few years ago, it exploded right in the sky and everyone died. But Kardama Muni, he didn't just go to one moon. He was going from one planet to another. He was going to all the heavenly planets. And there was no seat belts. There was no takeoffs. There was no flaming fires, explosions going off. It was very peaceful. He created a whole city. Beautiful palace with swimming pools, lakes, swans, peacocks, servants, beautiful lady maidservants assisting his wife, Devahuti. The palace was marble, onyx, gold, jewels, lapis lazuli, emeralds, diamonds, rubies. And they just went from place to place. It was a very romantic scene. Not like the space travel today. So how does the rational mind logically appreciate this? The planets are so far from one another. How could he do it like this? Because it's very easy to understand if you know that he was dealing on a whole different level of reality. There are levels of reality that cannot be perceived by our gross senses. Krishna says in the Gita, Bhumir apo vanovayam kama no buddhir eva cha ahankara iti ame vina kathirashtita. That there are 8 material elements, 5 are gross, 3 are subtle. Our scientists hardly have been able to figure out
even the beginning of how the gross elements are working. With their microscope, they see the molecules, the atoms, the neutrons, the electrons. And they're still speculating like anything how these subatomic particles are working. And factually, all matter is created by these molecules. So the basis of what we can see with our eyes is so complex by the arrangement of God, we cannot understand. What to speak of the subtle elements of mind, intelligence, and ego? They also have form. But we can't see it with our eyes. And how the mind works, nobody can figure out their own mind. Most psychiatrists, they have the largest rate of suicide of anybody in the world because they're so frustrated trying to figure out other people's minds that their own mind goes mad. Huh? So in this way, there are various levels of existence. Kardama Muni, he was a mystic yogi, he could understand what was the subtle basis of this gross and subtle material existence. And therefore, he could very easily create such unimaginable, unthinkable inventions. Out of nothing. He didn't have to have a construction crew come to build his palace. He simply did it by his meditation. So in this way, when we speak of destiny or providence, we are speaking of a principle that cannot be understood through our perception of logic. This is a higher spiritual law. We can understand basic idea, but we can never understand the details. The basic idea is as ye sow, so shall ye reap. For every action, there is an equal corresponding reaction. That we can understand rationally. But the details of what is taking place is impossible to understand. Why? Because karmana deva netrena. Because they are working directly under the, directly or indirectly under the supervision of Lord Sri Krishna. So Vasudeva, because he was a self-realized soul, he understood that all of this is happening because of the will of providence. And if this voice in the sky, which is announcing the will of providence, that the eighth son will kill Kamsa, if that is to be true, then how can any of us try to figure out how exactly this will take place? Because after all, if Kamsa kills Devaki, then how is her eighth son going to kill Kamsa? Huh? These things cannot be explained. So let me just try to save my wife now and leave the rest to Providence. And I'll make a promise that I will give you, Kamsa, each one of my sons, whenever they're born. And why should I fear doing that? Because if he's meant to be killed by the eighth, whether I give them or not, he will be killed. And besides that, he may just die on his own. We don't know. If this voice in the sky is not correct, he may just die on his own. Then there's no fear. So let me do the needful now. You see, when there's a fire, you have to stop the fire right then and there. It is said that things that are auspicious should be done now. Things that are inauspicious should be put off for another time. When something very inauspicious comes into your life, it must be dealt with now. Because it's like fire. It will become worse and worse and worse. And the longer we wait, the more it's going to be so much trouble. This material world is like fire. When a problem comes into our life, it's not so hard to stop a fire in its premature stage, but if we neglect it, if we ignore it, then it becomes very, very difficult, if possible at all, to put it out. So therefore, these things must be stamped out. I remember Srila Prabhupada, when he would hear of some disease growing within the Hare Krishna movement, such as at one time in 1971, the devotees at New Vrindavan all met from all over ISKCON in America. Bhaktipad was with Prabhupada in Japan for some deity installation. So all sannyasis and everybody came to New Vrindavan. Everyone was young devotee. At the most, 4 or 5 years they were devotees, at the most. So there were several hundred people there. And these devotees, some of the leaders, because they were reading these various books by Mayavadis, which Prabhupada said, don't read these books. You will simply be bewildered. Don't think you're so advanced to be mixing and reading all these other people's ideas. Just try to understand what your guru is saying. Sometimes our devotees, they think they're very proud. They think I'm very advanced. I'm some sort of a gopi or saki. I can understand all these different Vaishnava principles. But actually, it will only hurt your spiritual life. First thing you have to do is totally understand what your guru is saying through his books before going jumping all over the place. And after you thoroughly understand, then you can see how other ideas have relationship. It perhaps can enhance your understanding with some background information or other experiences. But it is all nonsense to think that we are so great when we are not, that what our guru has given his life to give us, that we minimize that to try to hear what everybody else has to say. So people are like this. It is our tendency. It's a type of false pride. And so these devotees, they were cross-checking Prabhupada's teachings. And their conclusion was that Prabhupada's God. And he's saying he's not God because that's what Lord Chaitanya did too. But actually he is God. And factually, if you want to go deeper into the subject matter, we are also God. The only difference is Prabhupada is you and me, but he's teaching us how to become him. And they were teaching like this, very rationally. And everyone was believing. And the whole ISKCON was becoming Mayavad at this Janmashtami festival, I believe, or some festival. So two devotees, Hayagriva, Sham Sundar, they had very close association with Prabhupada. They were thinking, this is not what Prabhupada says. What are these people doing? It's a whole wave, it's a whole movement. So they wrote to Prabhupada, what is happening? Prabhupada immediately, stamp it out. If this spreads within our movement, it will destroy everything. It must be dealt with at once. This is like fire. So he immediately, he just started sending letters, he started traveling, he even wrote pranam mantra for himself. Usually guru is some disciple or some well-wisher writes pranam mantra. His original pranam mantra was given. But the second pranam mantra, he wrote it himself. Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschacadesha Tharani. That I would offer my obeisances to this disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who has come to the West to liberate the people, to stamp out all impersonalism and voidism. And he ordered his disciples. He ordered, every time you bow down, you chant this mantra. Every time you have kirtan, you chant this mantra. He wanted to make it clear that he wasn't God and that we're not God. We are all his eternal servants. And another time in Los Angeles, some devotees, as again thinking themselves to be very, very advanced, they were going to Vrindavan on their own without the association of their god brothers, god sisters. Some of them were frequenting places like Radhakund, They were meeting, they had no, because they're neophytes, they're infants, but they think they're grown up. They don't know who to associate with, who not to. They have no discrimination. They thought they were more advanced than their god brothers. Just see, I'm entering into these higher leelas. They're still reading Bhagavad Gita back at the temple. And went to Radhakund and places, and they met these various Babajis who appeared to be very advanced devotees and were telling them all these ideas which were contrary to the principles of a true Vaishnava. Taking Krishna consciousness cheaply without going through the process of strict rules, regulations through sadhana bhakti, they thought that they could just enter into some rasa with Krishna while still having material desires. So they came back and they started a whole movement, Gopi Bhava movement. They just meditate on the mood of the gopis. Just the gopi separation from Krishna. These Bhagavad Gita, all these things, this is for the neophytes, but the real essence of our philosophy is the gopi bhava. Just think about this. And they, the devotees, yes, this is very nice. Gopis, we should become like gopis. Let us read Antya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and these nice stories. And there's so many nice books from Vrindavan we found about gopi bhava. And when Prabhupada heard about this, he flew right to Los Angeles. And he was like a lion. That this is a poison disease that will destroy our movement. Stomp it out now. Taking Krishna's lila cheaply, taking spiritual life so cheaply, to think that you can have the bhava of a gopi when you're still attached to the mind and senses. First you learn Gita. First you learn how to be an obedient, humble servant and a disciplined disciple. And after many years, when you become purified, naturally the bhava of a gopi will awaken in your heart. But to jump to this advanced stage, sahaja, it's just taking everything cheaply. Nobody will make any spiritual advancement. And the devotees were arguing with Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, by thinking of gopis, we will become purified. Prabhupada said, no, you will become putrefied. This is not the process. The process is you follow the direction of the spiritual master. You don't just take spiritual life so cheaply that you just go shopping for whoever sounds nice and accept what they have to say. Huh? So Prabhupada, my God, how he brought everyone in his room and he just... because he saw it was fire. If this fire is allowed to grow, so many people will be casualties. Therefore, emergency situations must be dealt with now, stomped out now. So Vasudev, having this understanding, knew that providence, ultimately Krishna, is the supreme Godhead. Devaki is meant to be his mother. As a service to Krishna, I have to somehow or other protect Devaki. And right now, whatever what happens in the future, what Krishna's arrangement is, Vasudev said, I may not understand. Providence, Krishna's mercy, whatever you want to call it, it is very much invisible and incomprehensible. But one thing is, there's an immediate danger, and I must save the situation by any means. Now, it's an emergency. Whatever I have to do, whatever I have to say. So Vasudev is promising Kamsa, every son I will bring to you, and you can do anything you like with it. You can kill it, you can hold it, anything you like. And Kamsa knew that Vasudev was man of his word. Even though Kamsa was such a duplicitous person in his own life, Kamsa was willing to imprison his own father, imprison his own sister, imprison his own brother-in-law, murder infant babies all over the land. He understood that Vasudev was good. That Vasudev was honest. And he respected that. And he knew that Vasudev was a man of his word. And here we find that a man of honor, even the lowest demons can respect that honor. And by the dignity of that honor, people believe what we say, even if they're demoniac. So one time Prabhupada was asked, how do we know who is your disciple? And Prabhupada said, you will know them because they are perfect gentlemen. That means they're men of honor. They're men of high principles and ethics. And when people see that, then they respect that. And even if they themselves are very crooked, of course, the very demoniac they will persecute. They will, because they know that honor and dignity has potency, power. And if they want to kill it before it infects like a disease and makes other people honorable and pious, then they will not be able to exploit them and manipulate them. But those persons who have some sense of innocence, they will respect. Ah, I could trust this person. I could hear him. So many of our devotees, sometimes when they come, their parents, they become very much disturbed that what is my child getting into? She's going with these devotees of Lord Krishna. Who knows what kind of a cult is this? And the children, how to preach to my parents? The best way to preach to your parents is to just live a life of such high ethics, such high morality, such high respectability, that in due course of time they think, my God, my son is such a good man. Whatever he's doing must be very good. Then they will listen to you. Not only will they listen to you, they will become devotees as well. But if you just start preaching philosophy, they'll think you're crazy. They'll think you're brainwashed. So many examples we have seen. When children try to preach to their parents become frightened like anything. But if children just act like very, very high-quality human beings and go on with their spiritual disciplines, and their parents see, my God, he's not preaching to me, but he's such a good man. It may take some months for them to see this. What is it about this movement that is making my son or my daughter such a good person, such a honorable human being? I want to understand this. Then they hear. Then they start chanting. Ah. In America, we have seen devotees go home, they try to preach to their parents get so frightened. My God, this philosophy, they're talking about how I'm not my body. What kind of nonsense is this? I'm not my body. I've given 50 years of my life for this body, and he's telling me I'm an illusion. He's telling me that the last 50 years I've dedicated to hard labor, working hard, going to college, going to school, bringing up, getting food to his mouth, feeding his putting him through school, putting him through college, and now this child has the nerve to say that I'm not my body, that my whole life has been wasted, that I'm an illusion, that I'm dreaming, and that I should wake up. He better wake up. And they spent $5,000 to $10,000 hiring some deprogrammer to come and capture their son and put him in, lock him in a room with nails and boards in the windows and keeping him up by putting ice on his body and blasphemies against God and all sorts of World War II brainwashing techniques. And after the person has a nervous breakdown and he doesn't know what is what, then you just indoctrinate him with quote-unquote anti-cult propaganda. And then finally he comes out of it and he thinks, whatever you say is all right. They think, he's been saved. And then after that, after he comes back to his consciousness, he thinks, this is all Maya. And he goes back to the temple. That was the result of trying to preach to his parents. And then what? There's no use preaching to them. I'll just try to be a nice person. I'll just try to be what a devotee should be. Then they become nice devotees. Kind, considerate, polite, You're not engaging in any intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, no meat eating. Living very high values, honest. The parents say, my God, what's happened to my son? He's such a good person. And now those same parents are chanting Hare Krishna and coming to temple. I've seen. So Vasudev, because he lived a life of high honor and dignity, therefore, even Vasudev, I mean, even Kamsa, however demoniac he was, he had to believe him. He had to respect his word. So therefore, to be a good preacher, we have to follow in the footsteps of Vasudev. We have to live a life that commands the respect of people so that they're willing to listen to us. Srila Prabhupada used to say that a devotee should not demand respect, he should command respect. Demanding means, give me respect, I'm a sadhu. You see, I am wearing this cloth, I'm a sadhu, give me respect. Or give me respect, I'm initiated, I'm a Brahmin. This is all nonsense. You act like a humble servant of all living beings, and if you're actually living according to very high spiritual principles, compassion, knowledge, cleanliness, then you won't have to ask anybody. People will automatically be giving you respect. Even if you don't want it, you'll be saying, please, no, no, I don't want. No, please, you must accept. This is where potency comes into our preaching. When our life has a background in which people can actually trust and respect. And in this way, Vasudev is saving the immediate emergency situation. And Vasudev himself, he may, even though he's such a great Paramahamsa pure devotee, here his mind is being revealed in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Just because he was a great soul, it doesn't mean he was all-knowing. He didn't know exactly what was going to happen in the future. Some people think that great souls, they know past, present, and future. They know Krishna, that's all. Whatever Krishna wants to reveal to them, that much they know. Krishna knows past, present, and future. But they have faith. They have trust. So here we find Vasudev, maybe Kamsa will die. Maybe he'll die of some natural cause before any of my sons are born. Maybe I won't have any sons. Maybe the eighth son, if he's destined to kill, he will kill him. So let me just save my wife now. So Vasudev simply had faith. He didn't understand the situation, but he had faith. And he was such a great Paramahamsa that Krishna took birth as his child. So in this way, it's not that the great devotees that we should think that they know what is past, present, and future. That is so complex, how it is working. They know the principles, but they know one thing for sure. That if I simply have faith in Krishna and do what is right now, do what pleases Krishna now, then the future is guaranteed to be auspicious. That's all. I may not know what the will of providence is at this time for the future, but I know that if I save my wife, Krishna will be pleased and everything will be auspicious. However Krishna wants to make it auspicious, that is for him to decide. I am not God, I am only his servant, but let me just please him now. Let us do what is right in devotional service. Is there any questions? Thank you.
great Vedic science.
But unfortunately, in these days in Kali Yuga, it's hard to find a good astrologer. Everyone claims to be a good astrologer. Just like, for instance, just recently some of our devotees, they went to an astrologer to find out about a certain matching. And this astrologer said, if the two of you do like this, one of you will die within 2 years, certainly. No doubt. Good astrologer. Went to another astrologer. He said, perfect match. You're auspicious. Everything's auspicious about it. You should do it. This is one of the most well-known astrologers from North India. And they went to one of the most well-known astrologers of South India. He said, this is terrible, terrible, all problems. Will I die? No, no, you won't die, but very terrible problems. So here you have a top astrologer from Maharashtra, a top astrologer from Gujarat, top astrologer from Karnataka, and they all say completely different things, and they're talking about the same stars. It's not the Gujarati stars and Marathi stars and Canadian styles. Huh? So who's right? They're all authorities. They're, you know, everybody who follows says that he's best, he's absolute. So Prabhupada said, a blind uncle's better than no uncle at all. So you can get some information from them for some data to consider. But how can we take these men so seriously? They all speak like they're the utmost authorities, but then the next person who's also an utmost authority will say something completely different. Prabhupada, he would consult astrologers. They would say like this. And he would do the opposite thing. They'd say, well, why did you do this? You consulted. He said like this. He said, oh, Krishna's in control.
Thank you very much.